Everybody come on the floor. Guys, all right, you know what I'm saying?
Collective, CIUT 89.5 FM. It's another Vibe Radio Saturday.
Yay.
We're back. We had been preempted last week for the Guelph Jazz Festival, and we're back live in studio today, and like we do normally every Saturday from 3 to 5, and we are Jams.
Adrian Griffin World.
Mally, a.k.a. Docu Vixen.
And Luam.
And I believe Kemba and Victoria are probably both in transit and will be joining us shortly. So a big shout out to them. And as I said, we're the Vibe Collective. We're heard every Saturday from 3 to 5. From 3 to 4, we have roundtable talks. We talk about important issues like social justice, decolonization, identity,
love, music, jazz.
Yeah.
Hip hop.
Yeah.
Celebrity gossip.
Straight up. And then from 4 to 5, we bring you Music to Move You, which we will be doing later on today. But first, we do have some guests in the house, and I would like to welcome both Michael and Shashi. Michael.
And Satya's on the phone.
And these are the members from the Caribbean Tales Incubator, but let's give their full names. Why don't you all introduce yourselves, starting with Shashi. Go ahead.
Hi, I'm Shashi Baluja, actor, filmmaker, part of Caribbean Tales Incubator, and happy to be here.
Hi, I'm Michael Mulida from Trinidad and Tobago, writer, director, editor. Happy to be here too, first time to Toronto, and thoroughly enjoying the experience.
And wearing a fly Che hat, I might add.
Yes. And on the phone we have...
Hi, I'm Satya Kalimo from Trinidad, representing Barbados and part of the Caribbean Tales Incubator.
And so welcome all of you to the show. It's great to have
Thank you all here.
So before the show, I was chatting with Michael. He was saying that he had been taking in the sights of Toronto and enjoying the vibe here. And I know that you all have just been through a very intense week, known as the incubator at Caribbean Tales. So Melinda, do you want to?
I guess I'll just give a little background of, the incubator. The Caribbean Tales Incubator program is sort of, I like to call it a film boot camp for producers, film producers. And it takes filmmakers through the process of basically packaging their film or the film life, reaching their audience. So what we do is we bring... filmmakers specifically from the Caribbean diaspora and the Caribbean region together, and they go through a really intensive program of preparing for pitching their film. So it lasts for like 4 days, and then they pitch their film at the end of it. And then we leash them on to the Toronto International Film Festival, where all like 4,000 delegates are here. So go out there and try to connect with people to get their film out there. So, and they do it as a group. So, So that's sort of like thing, but you guys just went through it. So maybe you guys could talk about it.
So, well, first, why don't we hear from each of the filmmakers about their films, and then we can get to the incubator. Michael, why don't we start with your film?
Yep.
And maybe you can talk about, you know, the process of you know, how the film, The Cool Boys, how it started and then to fruition here in Caribbean Tales.
Okay, not a problem. You know, what basically happened was the film, I like to write from a lot of life experiences, and the Trinidad and Tobago Film Company had put out like a call for, they were actually looking for films targeted at youth markets. So from them I saw it, I just said, you know, I'm going to write something for that because being a young person growing up. So it wasn't that hard. It took me like honestly 3 days to do the first draft, and then I probably did like 10 more drafts on it to kind of develop it. And that's really how the process went on. And once it was selected and I got the funding, I just went into like filmmaker mode, because then you know you have a project like greenlit, so you know you're going and you're going. You know, for me, it's kind of interesting because I like to wing like maybe the last 40% of a film. Mm. So like I'm like 60, but no, but I like, because I want that process to be kind of like on the day too, and not just necessarily thoroughly prepared, because I think a lot of things happen in those moments and people have other ideas and it's a collective and I want everybody to be involved in it. So I give people a lot of artistic leverage, like my actors, and because you know I feel like they have their own talents to bring to the table and we all trying to share in creating something. So that's like, so in it we have three young men and two of them are actually artists in Trinidad. One is a rapper called Nebula and the other one is a soca singer. So between these two, like, they had a lot of their own personalities that I was happy to have as characters so they could just bring that into it. You know, because we have trained actors, but I don't feel like all the trained actors could give you a lot of different characters. You know, because I would love when somebody interview, or when they come to cast, they bring out like 10 different versions of the same thing. Then I feel like, okay, they have some flexibility that, you know, you could work with. This guy, a lot of these things. But I'll just give you a little bit of what the film is about. It's just about three young men that kind of go out for a night of fun in Trinidad and Tobago. And they go to parties and then they meet up with some girls. And then, like, they fall out to some gangsters over the girls. And yeah, they, like, get out of that trouble. And it's 30 minutes long, but what's interesting about it is, and there's some kind of experience that had similar ones. I wouldn't say exactly like what happened in the film, you know. But, like, in Trinidad, if you, and two people fall out, you're going to see that person again, right? So, you know, it's real. So, and the story kind of deals with that. Growing up as a man, you feel invincible. And then you go into that age is where you really cares, like, what's somebody going to do you. So it's speaking to that audience, you know. But I think everybody could enjoy it. Yeah.
Hey, Shashi Baluja. My film is Ariana, which I've been developing into a feature. It's a short film that was already made. It's a 27-minute film. It was based on my grandmother. It's about a gay doctor and his lover who have a very meticulously planned life, and then his West Indian demented grandmother migrates to North America and moves in to live with them. So completely disrupts their life and turns everything upside down. But it's about their relationships and you know, them coming to terms with each other, you know, the lover coming to terms with the grandmother as two people who are in a house together all day long while the doctor's out at work. You know, she has put a huge rift in their relationship. And then it's also about the doctor coming to terms with the fact that his grandmother has dementia and the woman that raised him no longer is. So, yeah, it's a comedy. No, it's got a lot of comedic moments. It's a drama. And so I'm developing this into a 90-minute feature called Mama Grace is the working title, which was my grandmother's name. And I'm going to be shooting it in Antigua and in Toronto.
Well, thank you for that, Shashi. And Satya, what about your film?
My film is called Diaries of an Immigrant, which is a 30-minute drama that I did research on a few illegal immigrants that have come to Barbados and are now prostitutes. So I compiled the stories and I made it into one, and it's about this young single Guyanese mother who's illegal in Barbados and she's trying to get her daughter to Barbados. But because Barbados is a society that is a little xenophobic, she has a few problems getting a job and being accepted into society. So she becomes a prostitute, and she's eventually betrayed by her friend. And I think that this story is just really important to tell, because in Barbados, well, a lot of people looking into Barbados, they see the island as this beautiful place with sandy beaches and blue skies, and everybody's happy. But they, instead of like looking into the societies, they're looking out. So I just wanted to give everybody that perspective and hopefully continue the discussion of human trafficking in the Caribbean.
Interesting. So it sounds like relationships are a central focus of all of the films so far.
Yeah.
And relationships can be really hard to document, let alone grasp in our day to day. So maybe, like, I have a couple of questions, but maybe I'll start with you and your film about people who do sex work, and also people who have who are migrants and don't have status because of borders, and how you maybe talk a little bit about how this film idea came about for you, whether you talked with people who have done sex work in Barbados, and okay. talked with people that are without documents, and how you've come around the language for it, even, you know, like when you say illegal versus undocumented or without status, how that affects your film and the way that you talk about it.
Okay, it was very difficult for me to find the topic that I wanted to do, because this project was actually done for my thesis at the Albarra Center for Creative Imagination, which is part of UWE in Barbados. And I just went back and I was just looking at all the topics that I have done before, and I was like, there was a common thread between them. And at the moment, that was about a year and six months ago, there was a lot of talk about Chinese women and illegal immigrants in Barbados. And one of my friends, she lived next to a woman who was a prostitute. She's legal, but she is a prostitute, and I interviewed her, and she was the one that really inspired me to take that angle of my story of a single mother, and what wouldn't a mother do for her child? Because we all know that if your child comes to you and says that, okay, mommy, I'm hungry, and you can't provide for her or him, that's very painful, and you would do anything for that child. So that is what really compelled me to do the story. In terms of illegal immigrants in Barbados, there are a few. They're from all over. It's not only Guyanese. They're from all over the island. And it's because of different problems in their own island. And my story touches on Caribbean integration. Well, it shows Caribbean disintegration, and I'm just trying to touch on those topics.
Mm, interesting. And then with your story about the grandmother and the doctor, right, and the doctor's partner, and there's a lot there. So
there
So in the short film, how do you feel in the feature film, in the longer one, you're able to distill more the relationships? Are you going to focus more on the relationship with the grandmother and the doctor, or...
Yes, all of the relationships are going to be expanded on. It's we did very well on the festival circuit with the 27-minute film, but you know, it was really packed. And you know, I made it while I was in New York, and I couldn't leave the U.S. because I was waiting for my green card. And now I want to go back to the Caribbean because my grandmother inspired me to make this. Mm. And so I've just always pictured, you know, a gay actor, mm-hmm, West Indian actor living in New York. And, you know, my grandmother had a very strong influence on my life. And so I just always pictured, you know, what would happen if she moved in with me and my lover. Like, yeah. I think, you know, because, you know, my grandmother, I mean, she spoiled me rotten. And, you know, grandparents have this thing about validating a child, which is amazing. Mm-hmm. And she would always let me get away with a lot, even though I would do things that stood against her moral and spiritual Christian beliefs. Yeah. So I think it'd be interesting, and it is interesting, to explore, you know, how she would respond to living with her son, her grandson, her gay grandson, and his lover, and not, you know, expressing that openly, verbally, what she was feeling, but it would manifest in her behavior and her actions. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, at the onset of her dementia, you know, it gets even more complex. Mm-hmm. And in the film, the lover is a stay-at-home actor.
Okay.
So it's beyond her comprehension that, you know, this guy is staying at home, you know, all day with her while her grandson's out working and providing for him. You know, and so it's about their relationships and coming to terms with each other. And as, you know, as their relationship progresses and her illness progresses, he becomes her caregiver, which is really interesting. In the meantime, you know, there's a huge rift between the lovers, between the partners. And so they have to deal with that situation. And then also the doctor has to deal with, you know, his relationship with his grandmother, mm-hmm. and coming to terms with it and acceptance. You know, he's sort of one of these people that throws himself into his work, sort of control freak, you know, doesn't want to deal with his emotions, like, very much like West Indian men, but I mean men in general. But, you know, it's just really interesting to see how these relationships are juxtaposed and in that environment, you know, integrated with all of these different cultural sort of aspects and, you know, religion and, you know, displacement in another society.
Right. Interesting.
Yeah.
I wanted to get into talking a little bit about the incubator itself and what first of all, you know, did any of you, Satya included, have any expectations coming in as new filmmakers, you know, attending Caribbean Tales for the first time? And as you went through the process, I understand it is a very intense process. Melinda was a part of the incubator last year.
It was a couple of years ago.
Was it?
Yeah.
Okay. Wow.
And she's still traumatized.
Yeah. I understand it is a very intense process, but from what I understand, you come out sort of feeling like you have more tools in your toolbox as a filmmaker. Can each of you speak to that? And Michael, do you want to start?
Yeah. I could just start from my experience. What happened is they started to send this homework for you to do from the time you was in Trinidad, like from a month before you come up here. And it was just so much. So I was like, man, what's going on? And they would check up on your homework. So you had to be like, we didn't see this, we didn't see that. And so I was coming into...
What kind of homework did you have to do?
It's just a lot of preparation. So they wanted you to have like a press kit for the film you come into pitch. They wanted to make sure you have your synopsis, your log line.
Budget.
Yeah, budget. Like, so like you really came prepared and wasn't doing that work when you were there, so they could now focus on your pitch. But if you know, like for me, I was pitching a new project and I was writing it. So I'd finished my first draft before I came up here. So to switch out that now and be like, oh, let me get my synopsis, let me get artwork for this film. It was just a lot to do. But then it was good to have to be almost forced to do it. So now you have it. And then after the incubator experience, you can refine it more. Although they did a good job refining this. But I'll just say, like, the incubator itself felt kind of like a pitch boot camp because they, like, started off, threw you in the fire, broke you down, and then rebuilt you. So you kind of came back out like, oh, yeah, I'm ready. I can pitch for anybody now. But in the middle of it, you was just like, I don't want to pitch. I don't want to pitch anything. So it was a good, good process.
Yeah. I think we all had a little meltdown at
some
point.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, everybody did.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Satya.
No, I was saying that everybody did melt. I know I had to go in the bathroom one day, and I was just like, "Oh my gosh, I don't want to do this," but I don't like to give up. So I was like, "You know what? I'm just gonna do this and get over it with it." And when I did it, I was so relieved. I was like, "Oh, I can finally breathe again," because I am not used to speaking in public. I don't like to show my it's not that I don't like to show my work. I'm just a little shy about my work because I'm so new in this industry. So it was really, it was good for kind of diminishing my insecurities about myself. And that was the hardest part, being out of your comfort zone for a whole week. Yeah, that is really rough.
It was tough. But I just wanted to throw in that I think the group had so much love with each other. Like there was no competitiveness. It was just support.
Yeah.
I don't think anybody would let anybody quit in that group. Everybody was there for each other. So, you know.
How many people were attending the incubator this year?
It was 11. 11 of us. Yeah, it really was like boot camp. I mean, it was insane. I mean, and I've made films before. And, you know, every one of us are at a different point in our project. Some of us are at script. Some of us, you know, just about to go into production. Some of us already have a short. We're making feature, et cetera. So everyone's journey was a little bit different, you know, but it really, you know, like kicked your butt to focus in and do whatever you needed to do to get to the next step. What for me was terrific was because I needed that West Indian perspective, mm-hmm. because I want to go back to the Caribbean to make my film. And I, you know, sitting with this group of really talented filmmakers, you know, the generation, the now and tomorrow generation, was just really inspiring. And they gave me so much, you know, of themselves that have got, you know, went to, you know, is now in my project. And it's just, it's taken it to a whole other place that I had no idea that would happen. And it's pretty cool.
And can you talk about the pitch itself when you went in and did hell, the big pitch.
Hell, hell.
First of all, who were you pitching? And what was the feeling like walking into the room and was it a sit down face to face or are you pitching a committee? What does it look like?
Well, I would say is if anybody got to sleep the night before that pitch, they did a good job because I got like 1 hour. But it's in TIFF building. And it's like a breakfast. So, you know, they have all the guests eating breakfast. And there's a room full of about 50 people.
At least, yeah.
At least 50 to 60.
Who's in the room? Who are the 50 people?
It's like
everybody in the industry, from producers, financiers, distributors, the gamut, other filmmakers. Yeah. I mean, every accomplished filmmakers festivals, and directors, other festivals.
It's a room full of people who would know if you be BSing. Is that they could see through you, so they will know if you know your stuff or if you don't. Yeah, it's like that, and then you have to go up in front. I pitch last, and I pitch a film called Tabanka, and that's what's coming. And for me, it was a lot of pressure because I was number 11, and all 10 went before me, and everybody killed it. So I was like, I can't be the last man to come here and mess up now. Everybody did so good. I was like, but you know, mine went well too. So I think everybody peaked on that day. It was interesting.
What was interesting is that, you know, during the incubator, we had to make up and break down like our pitches like over and over again. So, you know, we had like 15 or 20 versions. And on, you know, was it day 5 or 6 when we went in to make the pitch, you know, you'd already gone through like 30 versions of your pitch. And, you know, some which worked, I mean, magnificently, some which just completely bombed. And then so it was just like this crazy time because you had all of this sort of stuff out there and, you know, around you. And it was like, okay, how do I focus in? How do I narrow in? But I think we all did pretty great.
I actually rewrote my pitch at 4 a.m. We pitched at like 9. I got up 4 a.m. and I was like, I just rewrote the whole thing. And that's why I pitched.
Yeah, I kind of let everything go the day before. I was just like, I cannot look at this anymore. Satya, yeah.
I was asleep because I only got 1 hour and I put my alarm for the afternoon and not the morning, and I got this call that, oh my gosh, where are you? You have 5 minutes. I'm like, no. But luckily, I'm a pre-production person, so I planned everything the night before, so it was just to jump in the shower and run out. So, yeah.
So what are some important elements of a pitch? After having gone through the incubator, do y'all have things that you always have in a pitch, or is it just depending on who you're pitching to, you'll adapt?
Well, it depends on who you're pitching to. But it's the most important thing is to know your story inside out.
Yeah.
That is the most important.
And after that, I think, is to be able to tell your story in 2 sentences, your log line.
Mm. Log line is like your thesis.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. If you could tell your story in 2 sentences, then you know what it's about and transfer that information about what your film is about. You know, that's important. He said, because it's easy to tell people about the storyline, but not actually what the film is about.
Mm. Yeah, and then, you know, it's great when you do a log line on paper, you know, you have 2 sentences, but then to actually say it.
Yeah, and remember it.
It's completely different.
Because we had to pitch for 3 minutes. Mm-hmm. That was the length of time we had to remember 3 minutes with. So yeah, and you're hitting different parts you had to talk about, you know, the marketing.
Yeah, well, you need your hook, you know, your story. You need to tell them what you're doing with the project, where it's going, what stage it's at. You need to talk about what you need. You need money, what your budget is, what your market is.
Yeah. I mean, we just look at it like act, beginning, middle, end mm-hmm. of your pitch. But, yeah, it's a lot of information to get in it. And you're the only person to believe in it because most of the times you're looking for funding. So, that's the game.
And so, are you... when do you hear back from the people you've pitched to? Do you follow up with them? Yeah. How does that, what does that look like?
Well, they kind of follow up with you because you exchange yeah. contacts and you maybe send an email after saying, I am so-and-so. And then they will probably reply and see whether they're interested or not.
Yeah, you could tell whether they are because right after, like they have a yeah. little conversation, they come and talk to you. Like, oh,
yeah. Yeah, a few of us had, I think all of us had people talk to us and some expressed interest. I got a couple of meetings afterwards.
Yeah.
So, which I have to follow up on now, you know, when I get back to New York, it's going to be like a lot of work. But, you know, and then everybody else, you know, we have everybody's information, so we need to follow up mm-hmm. and, you know, see who can help us. And
it was actually yeah. one of the ladies who were there. She did a film called Home Again, which shot in Trinidad, and I was on her set when I was in Trinidad, so she was on the judges. So me and her talked a lot because, you know, just because I was trying to pitch to do a co-production, so she's explaining, like, things I need to really do if I wanted to make a co-production happen, and you know, so that was a lot of helpful information and those kind of things.
Okay, well, I just want to remind the listeners, first of all, that you're listening to The Vibe Collective, and we are speaking with filmmakers from the incubator, the Caribbean Tales Incubator program. We are speaking with Michael Mulida. My apologies. I'm the worst with names. And you'd think with my name I would be good with names, but I'm not. And Shashi Baluja.
You nailed
and
it.
Yay! And on the phone, we also have Satya Collymore. And you are all filmmakers who were participants in the incubator program at Caribbean Tales. We've got to go to a brief break. And when we come back, maybe we can talk a little bit about Caribbean Tales itself as a distribution vehicle for Caribbean film and what your perspective from the Caribbean looking at that happening is like. And we can talk a little bit more about your films. So if you all hang tight, we'll be back on the other side of the break.
All right, great.
Okay, so once again, you're listening to The Vibe Collective, and we'll be back after these brief messages here on CAUT 89.5 FM.
Canadian film is being made, and it needs your help. Minor is an independent feature about two girls from small-town Canada who steal a limo and play music on the road until one of them goes missing. The film is a beautiful drama mystery. It's about music, it's about Canada, and it's about women being empowered. And it's one of the first Canadian films out of the gate through Kickstarter's foray into our great and creative land. Please come and support it on Friday, October the 4th at the Silver Dollar, featuring live Alyssa Melka, Tess Parks, with special headliners The Saffron Sect and Dementia 13's Christian Hamilton. All proceeds of this concert go to the production of this new and exciting independent film, Friday, October the 4th at the Silver Dollar, presented by CIUT. For more info, visit Kickstarter.com and enter Minor the Film.
This Sunday, September 15th, join Greenpeace for a bike ride to save the Arctic. Meet in Allen Gardens at 1 p.m. for this critical mass-style ride. More info at greenpeace.ca/iceride.
The evolution continues. CIUT 89.5, Toronto.
And we're back here on the Vibe Collective CIUT 89.5 FM. And I am Jams. And we didn't get a chance to welcome her, but she did arrive. So I'm going to pass the mic to her.
Hi, I'm Victoria Grant.
Looking fly with the hair, by the way.
Yes, yes, yes. Oh, she couldn't hear you. She's complimenting your hair. And that was?
Luan.
Mally, aka Docky Vixen.
Adrian Griffin Wall.
And we're the Vibe Collective. Shout out to Kemba, who Victoria just reminded me is not coming in this week.
Next week.
Yeah, but apparently we're preempted next week. I have to double check on that. But I heard Ted from Evidence talking about that earlier.
Penticton Jazz Festival.
Penticton? Who's in Penticton?
No, Melinda's making that up.
Don't. What is Penticton?
Yeah, don't.
Exactly. I think that's what she's trying to get at. It's because we are anyway.
Anyways. Okay. So, we're the Vibe Collective. We're heard every Saturday from 3 to 5. From 3 to 4, we have Roundtable Talks. We talk about important issues like film, art, culture, social justice, environmental racism,
radical movements, yes, love, black liberation,
yeah, indigenous liberation,
celebrity gossip.
Oh,
and for Kemba, environmental racism.
Yes, 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 yes.
The Caribbean.
That's right.
Yeah. The Caribbean and gay films.
Yes, and queer culture, queer resistance, yes, and all things beautiful and queer.
Yeah.
I'm currently coming out as we speak.
Okay. Are you?
No. Yeah. Well, I actually am with my new film. I really am. So it's going to be interesting going back to the Caribbean, presenting myself as a gay man, mm-hmm, and a gay filmmaker.
Mm-hmm. Aha, I see. Okay.
Yeah.
I think we need to get into that dialogue a little bit. Now, is that something that is of concern to you going back?
Oh, hell yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's one of the reasons I left. You know, I mean, the opportunity to make film wasn't there when I, and to be an actor wasn't there. And then, you know, it's a very, the Caribbeans are very it's a group of homophobic, very homophobic societies. You know, Antigua is not as bad as some of the other islands, but it's still, it's still pretty closed.
Mm-hmm. Which is why it's so important to tell our stories and to tell stories of queer resistance and queer love and the ways in which we survive and thrive and the ways in which we communicate and relate to each other and the complexities of those things, which is why I was like, ooh, I want to know more about the relationship, because there's so many dynamics in your film. There's the dynamic of the lovers and the relationship and the partnership and all of the complexities that sit within that. Then there's the dynamic of the grandmother and this historical lineage and the ways of like ancestral survival and her worry and desire for her grandson to be safe in the world, but then mixed in with her bigoted, homophobic, homophobic ways of living and the ways in which we try to love family members and people in our community, but then how that gets complicated when your choices are not respected and then taken a step further when you're persecuted for your choices.
Right. I mean, and, you know, on a fundamental level for some people, it doesn't tie in with their spiritual sort of belief and foundation. And so, you know, it makes it even more difficult because then, you know, when people start using religion or the Bible to persecute you, you take it to a whole other level because, you know, you start it interpreting things as you like, and it makes it very difficult. It makes it very difficult to have a dialogue,
especially because it is selective, sort of picking and choosing things from the scripture. If we were to take the whole scripture literally, the world would look a lot different than it does
absolutely
right now, right? I mean, some of the things suggested in that scripture.
It was great. I heard somebody the other day from the Caribbean quoting, and they quoted the Bible and all that stuff, and then they just continued on going, and the Bible says it's about Adam and Eve, not Adam and Steve. And it's just like, seriously?
Come up with a more less tired line one.
But is that it? That's not in the Bible. You know, so it's just it's interesting how I mean, it also has a lot to do with people's insecurities. And I think ignorance towards, another culture, another way of life that, is in some way threatening because you don't understand it. Mm-hmm. You don't get it. And you're not encouraged to.
Mm-hmm. And that's again, coming back to, the festival itself, part of the programming this year was to include a whole section on queer culture in the Caribbean. Melinda, do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. This is our second year of having a queer, we call it Queer Caribbean time slot. So we dedicate specifically for LGBTQ, TTTT, whatever. I'm not really good at the acronyms.
Queer and trans.
Yeah.
Spectrum.
Different.
Yeah. So that was our sort of initiative that we started last year. And then so we're continuing that. just to sort of create space for that, to include it within the Caribbean context, right? So actually put it alongside the whole festival. So
and tonight there's a film showcase.
Yes, and exactly. There's that's actually tonight at 6:30.
Yeah, my film starts at 6:30. Ariana's
film gets played, so people should go and buy tickets.
And where is the screening?
It's at Harborfront Center.
Go and check that out
at 6:30. And there's a big feature called Elliot Loves, and it's about a coming-of-age story of this Dominican in New York. It's actually really good. So you see Sashi's film, and then you'll see Elliot Loves.
I'm really thrilled that the Caribbean Tales and Frances Ann Solomon have done this. And also, I have to give a shout-out to the Council of Antigua and Barbuda, because they actually sponsored my film, which is it's kind of cool.
Yeah, they supported us big time. So and bringing Sashi up here, so big ups to them. Yeah, and then also now we're talking about screenings. We also have a closing film called Songs of Redemption, which is also good, which is at 9:15. So yeah.
That's great. I think the critical thing here is that because, you know, these stories are not often told on the screen anyways, we're usually left to, word of mouth or, reading about what it means to be queer, what it means to be queer in the Caribbean, especially, and that struggle. And as you were saying, there are all these layers to the homophobia that exists within the Caribbean.
Absolutely.
And I think film is, it's such an important tool for
inclusion,
the telling of any story, but also, inclusion and representation and going beyond, the queer spectrum, just as Caribbean filmmakers in general, having this vehicle, having Caribbean Tales Film Festival as a vehicle to showcase your film. Can you talk about that, what that is like? Michael, do you want to talk a little bit about that?
I mean, Caribbean Tales, living in Trinidad and Tobago, I've seen Caribbean Tales in Barbados before, previously, in other years, and we had a film in it called Coolie Pink and Green at that point in time. So I'm aware of them, but I'm now aware of them in like the Toronto context. So I just know about them as a film festival in Barbados. So when I saw the incubator came up, I thought this is a good opportunity to come see what Toronto's about, see what they're about, and then develop my next film. So, but honestly, I didn't really come out here with too much expectation. I think I got way more out of it than I even planned on. So now I could definitely say me as a filmmaker is a partner, a supporting partner of Caribbean Tales throughout the world, and the distribution company. I'd put my films in with them and, keep building that relationship. Now that I feel like I have much more of an intimate knowledge of who they are. Whereas before, it just felt like another organization. I think that's where the disconnect is with us as filmmakers and the different platforms for us. We have to make sure and explore them to see what they're really about and if it fits. Because sometimes you make a film and, it's done and you just want to move on to the next project and we kind of forget about the other aspect. So I'm glad that I made sure and came out and put Cool Boys in it and did the incubator. And I just found a family. Like, I didn't think I'd find a film family in outside the Caribbean. Whereas in Trinidad, I feel way more alone as a filmmaker than while I was here, I felt at home with the other Caribbean filmmakers and with Caribbean Tales. And even Frances Ann, I really see how hard she works, and and I like what she's doing,
big
been
shout
amazing.
Out and lots of love to Frances Ann.
Yeah,
Solomon.
For sure.
Absolutely.
For sure.
We're
so happy.
She's probably at Harborfront right now.
Yeah. She is a force to be reckoned with.
Oh, yeah.
No doubt.
Yeah, and this family that she's creating is really important because, and for me, just the support of the rest of the group, is tremendous.
Yeah, I want to actually talk about that and basically, I guess, give some background of how Caribbean Tales came about. I think Frances Ann has been a filmmaker for, 30 years. Made a body of work, but then realizing where are you going to put that? Like, how are you going to get to audiences? How is your film going to get sold, or not sold, but seen by the public, right? So as a filmmaker, she realizes there's no people distributing Caribbean content at all. So I think it kind of filled a hole, you know. So I think, you know, Caribbean Tales as a festival is more than that. It's not just about that. It's also, it's really also like a filmmaker's festival, right? Because we're all filmmakers and we come to that with that kind of thing. And it's also creating infrastructure and, you know, a place where filmmakers could actually build to produce our content for our audience.
And distribute.
Yeah, distribute it. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if that gives it a better kind of idea of what the festival is.
They also just launched the video on demand channel two days ago, which is amazing. I think like over 300 titles from the Caribbean.
Yeah, so Caribbean Tales TV was launched on the 12th. It's a online VOD channel. So it's sort of a Caribbean Tales like Netflix. So you could go on and go through the catalog and watch some films.
Oh, I think that's an awesome idea, because people always ask where they could see Caribbean content. Even me as a filmmaker, like, where can I see your older work? And I'm like, I have a copy, so it's good. Yeah, no, it's good.
Give me my Vimeo link.
Yeah, right? Yeah, and is it free, this video on demand? Is it free? Is it like a monthly fee? How do you access it?
It's peer per view. So it's like renting a movie.
Okay.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah.
And then it just downloads onto your...
Yeah, you just like basically...
For the technically challenged like myself, I need it broken down.
I think there's also a monthly. It's pay-per-view and there is a monthly
levels,
as well.
Yeah.
So there's different ways of touching base.
And the link is Caribbean Tales, all one word,
-tv.com.
Yeah. And definitely check it out. You can look at all of the trailers for free. And it's a great, again, it's a great place to go. I know, you know, anytime I feel like just chilling out and watching a movie and just wanting to escape, but also having this like thing with Hollywood and the white supremacy and just all of the, you know, the lack of representation that comes from the films, you know, that are available on Netflix. It's just nice to go to Caribbean Tales.
It absolutely is.
And have access to these films.
I think. Yeah. Oh, sorry.
Go ahead,
sorry,
Satya.
No, I was going to say Francis Han is really trying to build Caribbean cinema, and I personally believe that Caribbean cinema is the next UA. So you all need to watch out for that.
And also, I wanted to talk about a little bit about you know, the international market and TIFF and when I first went in there, and having the difference from doing it by yourself and doing it with a group of people, right? Because you're going into, I don't know, you're going into this, like, monster. Like, people who don't care about your stories at all. So to have that support is really good.
I kind of feel like we attacked TIFF. Because it was like a group of Caribbean people making a lot of loud noise. And I'm like, who are these people? And we're like, oh, yeah, we get it. I got my film, man. You want to check it out?
How can they drink so much rum collectively?
And for the people that are listening that don't know, TIFF is the Toronto International Film Festival.
Yes.
Thanks for that, Lauren.
Thank you, Lauren.
Just assuming everybody knows TIFF
is. I was like, we've got people that are not listeners that are just from Toronto, you know, so for the international audience, for the non-filmmakers.
I put this on my Facebook, so hopefully some people in Trinidad logged on.
Right.
Yeah, and in Barbados, too.
I'm saying, if you live in Toronto, you don't know what TIFF is, I think you
Toronto, fine. I'm trying to reach to the international audience,
what
Adrian.
What do we have? We have, like, the Sky Dome, we have...
Celebrity Gossip.
Celebrity Gossip. You all have that. Caravana, and we have TIFF. Like, I don't know. I'm just going to go back.
That was a wonderful interjection. Thank you.
You'll have the
it
Blue
was
Jays.
Good to hear from Griff. And the Blue Jays, yeah. No, but it's true. I mean, TIFF is sort of one of the few flagship events that Toronto has that sort of puts us on the international map. But at the same time, it is, and what I love about the incubator program and having Caribbean Tales, you know, shout out to Cameron Bailey too for partnering with Frances Anne.
Oh yeah.
That was you know, something that happened I guess about 3 or 4 years ago now. And it's been great to see that, because again, you know, when you're so used to Hollywood looking a certain way and having a particular aesthetic that isn't, you know, diverse, for lack of a better way of putting it. You know, it's so heartening to know that, you know, Caribbean filmmakers are having access to, all of these.
Yeah, this global market. Through TIFF. And we've also had Tanya Williams from Real World has given us a lot of support. She's been at our pitches. She's been at a lot of our screenings. And you know, we have gotten a lot of encouragement. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Just to kind of piggyback off of what Melinda was saying, I think it's so important. There is a difference when you're going into something where people don't care about what you have to say, your point of view, the stories that you have to share, doing it solo as opposed to doing it with support. I feel that it would probably be very like comforting to have that support. You go in there with so much more confidence, just knowing that it's a group of you guys going in there, and like you said, Michael, just running up and attacking TIFF.
Yeah, I think we've been quite fearless with TIFF, to tell you the truth.
Yeah, as it should be.
I was thinking back. I remember, you know, back in the good old days with TIFF, you had something called Planet Africa. I think that Cameron Bailey was a part of that as well. And that kind of got moved into the larger festival because you had filmmakers complaining, like, we don't want to be ghettoized, we don't want to be segregated. I was wondering what besides, you know, and then years later we're talking about, like, okay, well, now we need our own thing in order to a platform to get our film seen. What besides, the recurring reality that Hollywood is Hollywood, is motivating the kind of cooperation between Caribbean filmmakers?
You mean our relationship with Hollywood? Is that what you're saying? Or?
Just in order to, like, cooperate but with each other, like, you know, like kind of this whole...
I think we're within ourselves, we're increasing the value of our work. I mean, you know, I personally, and I think collectively, we're valuing our work a lot more. And as we, you know, do that, then it becomes more important to the outside as well, because, you know, when you can sort of say, hey, look, we're here and we've got great, you know, content and it's interesting and everybody's interested, you know, people start paying attention. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, I a lot of people feel like Hollywood's not going to be what it is in a few years from now. And, you know, globally, you know, everybody's sick of the same model. You know, it's just one blockbuster after the other, or the same formula, the same everything. And people want different. And so, you know, with the whole new wave of independent cinema in the last 10, 15, 20 years, whatever, you know, I think this is just part of the evolution of it. And it's just...
I just think it'll always have different types of cinema. I don't feel like Hollywood necessarily going in. It's like the fast food, and it depends on what your appetite wants. Some people want some artistically, you know, with that they could take in and feel, oh my God, I just, like, that changed my life. Some people just want some kind of slapstick entertainment. So always have the different genres of cinema. That's how I look at it. So I really judge Hollywood, because after traveling the world, I just realize every country kind of interested in their own stories. And it's up to you to now try to share yours. Because if you open up that door and they look at it and they go, oh, wow, it's Trinidad. Huh? And then they want to come and visit. Because it's just like an education on the culture. So, that's how I really feel about it. Like, I don't judge Hollywood. Like, at first you do. But, I mean, because at the end, I want to see what LA is like. I've never been to LA.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Yeah, but I would
argue. I'll judge enough for both of us.
Yeah. I think we'll all judge enough for you.
Yeah, but.
Go ahead, Satya.
I personally don't feel threatened by Hollywood at all, because I believe that I'm making films for my society, for my community. And just like Payday, that was shown with my film, which is done by Selwyn and Shakira Bourne. Barbados really, right now, they need to laugh. And Payday is hilarious. And we can't really compare it to the Hollywood films, but it's appropriate for what Barbados needs now. So we need to look at what each society needs at the moment and make for that society.
And to that, I just want to talk a little bit about the artistic approach, because arguably, I mean, Michael, you're being very generous to Hollywood, I have to say. we tend business. To be very critical of Hollywood yeah. here on the Vibe Collective. And I wouldn't call what is coming out of Hollywood necessarily art. I would say it's very formulaic. It's presenting right. a very particular... It's, you know, in fact... You know, arguably, it's often a vehicle for capitalism. It's trash.
Yeah,
and it's like advertising different product placement and a particular lifestyle that most of us, you know, don't even have access to. So there's not necessarily an art that I think you find in an independent film. Can you all talk about what has influenced you as filmmakers in terms of films? Do you have any filmmakers that you admire, appreciate,
what inspires your artistic process?
I mean, I said Hollywood is fast food and had different types of cinema. I didn't say Hollywood is art. I didn't say that. I said it's fast food. I have some decent films that do come out from that system, but, you know, yeah.
True.
I would say I'm like, when I did my BA in film, we studied a lot of world cinema. So, like, Wong Kar-wai, I really like him. He did this film called In the Mood for Love, I don't know, and 2046. Mm-hmm. He's, I think, Hong Kong filmmaker, so excellent. It's like a whole different style, the way they do things. I studied Indian cinema too, so like Deepa Mehta and then Mother India and a whole different wavelength. So I mean, but some of my favorite directors, which is where it's like I kind of like the way Spike Lee does stuff a lot, because he comments, like he does a lot of social commentary through his characters. But at the same time, like I still kind of like a fan of Tarantino, so I think I appreciate a lot of different types of film. No, for real. You know? But at the end of the day, the films that really moved me, like in TIFF, I saw this film called 1982, and I felt like that was the best film I saw for this year. And it was just so, like, half the cinema was crying in the middle of that, and I was proper, like, everybody's like, people behind us breaking down, they're just tears here and sniffling. It's like, and you know, like, I didn't know how to come down from that film after I saw it. Like, everybody walked outside and there was just kind of silence. Like, what to do now with your life, boy? It's like, what do you do now? Like, and that's the kind of films that I think I enjoy. For me, life more or less inspires, like, human stories and the ability to try to change the world through film. I think that's where it's at for me. I don't know.
Thank you, Michael. And Shashi?
Well, for me, I'm from the Caribbean, born in Trinidad, grew up in Antigua, and then Canada, went to school in Canada. My father's from India. So I grew up with a lot of different influences in terms of what I saw, you know. I like different, you know. And when I moved to New York to become an actor, one of the reasons I started making film was because I couldn't get work as an actor because I couldn't be classified, you know. They didn't know where to put me. And that's why I started making content for myself. So for me personally, anything with diversity appeals to me. And I appreciate filmmakers in general, no matter where they come from. You know, I think... You know, as much as I won't go to the cinema, but to see a lot of things. But, you know, I love what Tyler Perry's doing for, you know, just putting black faces out there. But he's actually putting black faces out there.
He's putting carrot cake. I got to interject a little bit.
I'm not going to go watch it. Oh, my God. I just like, yeah,
you
all right. I just opened
up,
this huge door. And as it was coming out of my mouth, I'm going, oh, my God.
I was with you. Really, really with you. And then when you said TP's name, I just let out a big sigh. But you know what?
You know what? I hear what you're saying in terms of the necessity for creating vehicles to show the variety of black experience.
Right.
Now, Tyler Perry likes only showing caricatures of black people, which is where the reaction is coming from.
No, and like I said, I won't go to the theater to see it, but I'm just happy to see more black faces on screen. I'm just happy to see more diversity when, you know, if you went to the cinema, you'd actually see more color.
I don't know. But and this is something maybe a conversation to have more of, right? Because then we start talking about the politics of representation. And is any representation good? Should we just be happy that there's black people on there? Or do we need to interrogate the methods of representation, why we're being represented, how, and particularly too, right? Like as queer black people, how we're represented and what that means for our day-to-day. Because oftentimes the way that blackness is shown is without the consent or voice of black people, right? So I think that's also,
I think it's also a progression, and it's up to us to build on what's existing. I didn't see this much black cinema 15 years ago. Mm-hmm.
Exploitation films.
So, well, and now I just think, you know, let's take it to the next level. This isn't the standard of film by any means.
Yeah.
You know?
But also with Tyler Perry, we got to remember, it's black people, working class black people that supported him, right? It wasn't like he got sponsored by Hollywood and he just started making, like, coon films. Like, it was like he worked the circuit, you know? And this is what people supported. I've never sat through a Tyler Perry movie.
I don't think I've ever seen
it. It's rough.
I don't intend. I remember one time someone was like, "Yo, you gotta see this. You gotta see this." It was Diary of a Mad Black Woman. I was
No, the title even.
And I was like, yeah, you know, 30 minutes in, I'm like, yeah, I'm gonna go make some spaghetti or something, right? But, you know, my friend, she was like, "Yo, you gotta watch this," and I don't understand. But I think the appeal. You can't discount it because this is kind of what the people want, right?
Which people, though?
Black people.
Black people.
Well, he has a market. So.
He has the market. And then on top of that, it's like he built himself. Like, while people were trying to, like, you know, get this money from Hollywood or that money, this guy said, forget it. I'm just going to go give people what they want. And he had, like, I think, if you look
through
at
Tyler
Perry,
of white supremacy, though, I think sometimes when we're not given different options and when the only thing you're doing is, like, we have such a yearning to see blackness being represented that sometimes we'll accept bullshit. And that's the thing. It's like Saul Williams says it, right? Like, don't believe the hype even if the beat is dope, right?
Oh, yeah.
And so that's the thing.
There's
it's
a
like,
truth to that.
But
also,
you don't stop there.
But sometimes it does stop there, right? It's not a coincidence that Tyler Perry has reached the level of success that he has. Because blackness, when it's caricatured and stereotyped, then falls within the limits of white supremacy. So then it's like fire. Okay, yeah. And it's supported in a variety of ways by the infrastructures of Hollywood and infrastructures of white supremacy.
But
so
also,
I think that we also need to hold that context when we're talking about it.
I agree, but it's also with, again, working class, the people, this is who they elected with their dollars. Mm-hmm. And these are the images we had. Like, he made other kinds of stories before and went broke. Like, that's the story of Tyler Perry. Then he went and made these images and people started coming out. So it's kind of like, at what point and in what ways do we also hold the community responsible for these images?
Yeah. It's both.
I mean, but it's like, it's the same story, isn't like what Spike Lee saying, we could say maybe more socially relevant in terms of his message. And Spike Lee can't get funding to make an X film, or he has problems because he just on Kickstarter, and Tyler Perry, who making a different type, is more funded than anybody, you know. So it's kind of
funds just, himself.
He funds himself, right? But he built that, right? Exactly what you're saying. So it's a very interesting way to look at how.
Well,
it, you
I think
know,
I think happens. Spike Lee could have funded his film. I think he's just being smart.
Well, yeah, he wants that control. He's not trying to. Yeah, he wants the control over his own work, I think.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, Kickstarter's huge now, so it's like, why not exploit it?
Mm. I'm like, I don't know, Spike has enough money, so it's like,
when
you think of
but Kickstarter, you can always have more.
Well, that's exactly the thing, right? Remember, someone used to argue with me, it was like,
Manhattan is expensive for living.
And LA.
Yeah.
Okay, we're actually coming up to the end of our hour.
Oh, no.
We digressed a little bit.
We were just starting to have some fun.
And Victoria and I were just searching for this great quote that came from that television show, The Orange is the New Black, on, you know, these crumbs. Basically, we get these crumbs. We couldn't find the quote, but the quote was essentially saying, these are the crumbs from which we must feast. And let's try and cook up something real rather than this junk food.
Yeah. Caribbean Tales.
Yes. Yeah. Exactly. So coming full circle back to Caribbean Tales. Once again, big shout out to Frances Ann Solomon for building this really, really critical, important vehicle for Caribbean filmmakers. And I would like to thank the three filmmakers for joining us today. We've got on the phone who I'm sorry, Satya, that we weren't able to speak with you more. Satya Collymore.
That's all right.
It was good to have you joining us.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for joining us. And Michael Muldar.
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 Thank you. I had a great time.
Yes, thank you so much. And your film, The Cool Boys, if people would like to check it out and find out more information about it, they can go to thecoolboys.com and check out the trailer and find out more information about that.
Yes, and you all can go to Diaries of an Immigrant, too, page on Facebook. Check it out.
Diaries of an Immigrant. Search that, like the Facebook page, and
we'll put it on our blog and stuff.
Yeah, we'll be sure to put that out. And then, of course, Shashi Baluja.
Third time's a charm.
I was about to mix it up. Also,
Ariane is screening this evening as part of the Caribbean Queer Short Showcase. Wow, I got all that right in a row. At 6:30 at the Harborfront
Center.
Yes.
And so, my website's shashi.tv, shashi.tv. So there's plenty of information there.
Excellent. So again, we will put those links up on our website, which is thevibecollective.wordpress.com. And I want to thank you all for coming in and taking the time to join us today. And this has been a really great conversation. We'll have to follow up with you next time you're in Toronto. Please do get in touch with us, and we'd love to have you.
Definitely. Thank you.
Yeah.
Hopefully we'll have a film and TIFF.
Yes, you'll be back next year featuring your films in not just in Caribbean Tales, but also in TIFF.
Yep.
Yes, and not to say just Caribbean Tales, but
also we're bringing them with us.
Yeah, exactly.
Up in there.
Yeah. So we're the Vibe Collective, and we're heard every Saturday from 3 to 5. From 3 to 4, we have these roundtable talks. And then from 4 to 5, we bring you Music to Move You, which we are about to get to. We've got to go to an ad break, and then we'll be back on the other side with some music. I'm going to start off the set, and then Griffin will pick it up. And so I suggest you all turn up your radios and get ready. This is the Vibe Collective here on CAUT 89.5 FM.
The word on the street, Toronto's